Happy New Year, everybody. We got a solo episode today because I'm sharing 30 predictions, one for every single NBA team for the 2026 calendar year. We're talking about potential trades, some stuff that I've heard about through the league, just some random predictions I have as well, some statistical stuff as well involving teams. That's all coming up right now. But before we get to the show, a quick reminder, subscribe to Yahoo NBA on YouTube, please. That's where we're going to be having the video versions of my podcast, The Dunker Spot, The Big Number. I'm going to be having some breakdown videos on there as well. That's at Yahoo NBA. Just plug that into your browser, and that's how you'll find us. Happy New Year, everybody. I got one prediction for every single NBA team for the year 2026. Let's start off with the Atlanta Hawks. I'm predicting they trade for Anthony Davis. They have the incentive. They have the need. The cost makes sense for them. And so let's look at a potential fake trade for the Hawks since they've been tied to Anthony Davis here, with the Hawks getting AD, and they send out Zachary Risacher and Kristaps Porzingis. Now, I know Hawks fans don't like this idea. They're like, why would we give up a number one pick a year and a half into having him? And I think this is where this side of it is probably coming from the Dallas Mavericks. Sam Amick, among others, have reported on this about how Dallas would be open to Zachary Risacher, not Trae Young. And that's the other fake trade we could look at here, with a three-way type of thing. If the Mavericks don't want Trae Young, you'd have to find a third team. And so maybe something like AD going to Atlanta, Trae Young to the Kings, a guard needy team. There's not a lot of them out there. And then Dallas getting something like Zach LaVine with future picks. Something along these lines, I feel like, makes the most sense to me from Atlanta's perspective, because I wouldn't want to give up Risacher, even though I've been on the record saying that he looks like a bust offensively. I have my concerns there. He's still a former number one pick who's a really good defensive player already, a high IQ player, solid passer within the flow of the offense. I wouldn't want to give up on that player this early on for injury-prone Anthony Davis. I just don't like that path. I also don't even like the Kristaps Porzingis path, for that matter, either. I like that variance that he provides your team in the front court, whether he's in or out. When he's in, he's really good. When he's healthy, he's good dealing with pots. And so I just think for Atlanta, they more than any other team have some incentive here to go make a big move for an Anthony Davis, because this team looks a hell of a lot bigger when they got two bigs, one guy being Odeke Okongwu and then the other being KP or AD. Let's move on to the next one here. Number two, the Dallas Mavericks. I predict Jason Kidd moves to the Mavericks front office. I hinted at this a few weeks back when I did my podcast with Slightly Biased, and I asked Chris Haynes about it directly. Will Kidd move to the front office? There's been rumblings about that in league circles. NBA people think that Sean Sweeney, the former lead assistant for the Dallas Mavericks who moved to the San Antonio Spurs this offseason, that he'd be Kidd's number one target to be the head coach. Now, if he does move on from coaching here, right? If he does move on from coaching, if he does move to the front office, as I'm predicting here this summer, everything I've heard kind of connects with what we're seeing in the trade rumor mill right now, is that the Mavericks are trying to trade away guys and build around Cooper Flagg. Because with Cooper Flagg, 19-6-4 through 2025, scoring efficiency on the rise, he's starting to shoot the ball really well since his birthday in mid-December. But I feel like his defense is somehow underrated. It's somehow underrated. Help defense, we know about the steals and the deflections, the highlight plays, but on ball, isolation defense for Cooper. So far this year, Flags allowing only 0.75 points per isolation. That's third in the NBA behind Rudy Gobert and Alex Saar, and that's among the players to defend at least 100 isolations. He's defending bigger guys. He's defending quicker guys like Ja Morant types. He's switching across positions, staying in front of people. Cooper, I just feel like with him, we know what he does. People talk about his offense a lot right now, but there's not enough talk about his defense with what he already is as a rookie. I mean, third in the NBA behind Gobert and Saar, who's also having an awesome year for the Wizards defensively, individually. But Cooper Flagg, complete defensive player. Number three, let's stick with someone that Mavericks fans know, Luka Doncic. I'm predicting that Lakers fans turn on Luka. They turn on Luka. I feel like it's already starting to happen. It's boiling right now. he's been getting roasted on defense. Like, it's been bad so far this year for the Lakers with Luka. So many different times in which it just looks like he's a statue, not moving on the ball, a lack of intensity, a lack of hustle. He's looking a lot heavier. I mean, you know, the Men's Fitness magazine cover this offseason? He looked great playing Eurobasket. Now he just looks like Luka. He's put on the weight. I said before the season how worried I was about him being able to keep off the weight during the season. It doesn't look like he's himself, the guy that we saw this summer. And the Lakers, when they were winning, people were talking about them like they're fake because of their plus minus, their net rating and all that, and how they, you know, now we're seeing it, right? This team lacks life. They lack energy. It's easy to blame the return of LeBron. It's easy to blame the absence of Austin Reeves. And all of these factors are part of it. I think Luka has underwhelmed with his conditioning. But, you know, at 20-11 this year, all 11 of their losses have been by double digits. And this is kind of a Luka thing, because in the 23-24 season, the Mavericks went 50-32. 21 of those losses were by double digits. Last season, the Lakers lost 13 games after trading for Luka. 8 of those were by double digits. And so over the last 2.5 years in total, 61% of games lost when Luka played were by double digits. And so over this time span, last 2.5 years, there have been 19 players that were named to an all-star team and have won 60% of the games in which they played. Luka is second among those 19 players in games lost by double digits, second only to LeBron James. LeBron James has lost 73% of his games by double digits. So, I mean, there's, you know, what does this mean, like losing by double digits? I look at it like your team's just laying down dead. But, like, look at these numbers on screen if you're watching us on YouTube. 73% for LeBron, 61% for Luka, and then it drops down 54% for Kyrie, 52% for Jalen Brunson, 51% for Giannis, Evan Mobley 49%, Tyrese Halliburton 48%. There's a bunch of guys, all-stars, in the middle there around 42-40%. And so, but then if you look at the other guys on the other end of the spectrum here, Nikola Jokic 41%, all the way down to Jason Tatum at 31%, Jaylen Brown at 30%. These are guys that on teams that aren't getting blown out that often at all. It's basically double for LeBron and Luka. And so what does it mean? Like, a loss is a loss, but I just think these are teams that often lay down dead. There's a give up approach, a lack of defensive desire, want, and heart. And that's where I look at it right now with the way people are talking about the Lakers and talking about Luka and LeBron specifically as a team that just lacks that type of mentality. That's why J.J. Redick was, you know, ranting to the media about how it's going to be a hard practice and all that. I just think Lakers fans are going to turn on Luka this year. I think LeBron first, you know, he probably changes teams or retires. And then the pressure is really going to be on Luka to turn it around. Number four, the Nuggets don't die without Nikola Jokic. Jokic is going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks with a hyperextended left knee. But Aaron Gordon's back soon. Christian Brown is due back soon as well. We saw in their win against the Raptors, Daron Holmes got minutes as well. I've been a big fan of him since pre-draft. Holmes, three-point shooter, switchable big. Valanciunas got hurt in the game, so that kind of like hurts my argument here. But still, I still feel like the Nuggets have so much depth this year. Gordon was playing at an all-star level prior to his injury. Jamal Murray is playing at an all-star level. We get to see what Holmes can do with more consistent minutes. Jalen Pickett, Peyton Watson, these are guys that can have really good performances. Peyton Watson especially with a higher usage. I think there's a chance here for Denver that it could end up a blessing in disguise. I think this team is going to drop down the standings. I think they might touch the play-in temporarily, but I think the time for these young guys could be really, really important for them come postseason time. Think about the year they won the title. Christian Brown, right? Like mid-year, they trade Bones Highland. Christian Brown gets thrust into the rotation. He had big moments for the Nuggets on their way to winning the NBA Finals. And now it's guys like Holmes and Pickett and Peyton Watson getting more opportunity that trickles down from the lack of Jokic. And I just can't wait to see this team play. I think they're going to be competitive, even though obviously you're going to lose more without Joker than you would by having him on the floor. Let's move on to number five. The Spurs make a big all-in move. And with San Antonio on Wednesday night, New Year's Eve, their game, Wemby slightly hyperextended his knee, and they end up winning the game. They beat the Knicks. Champagne had an awesome game for San Antonio, hit a ton of threes. It looked like Klay Thompson out there. They win the game, as the Spurs have been doing without Victor. But, you know, it's scary, man. Like, he says he'll be fine. He says he'll play next game, and maybe he very well might. But he missed 12 games with a calf strain on a minutes restriction. Last season, his year was ended by deep vein thrombosis. His rookie year was healthy. His Mets 92 year, you know, the draft class year, he was healthy. You know, he sprained like a sprained ankle. And he remember when I think he stepped in the ball boy and he had a sore foot at one point in his rookie year, but nothing major as a rookie. But you go back, it's like in 2020 at age 16, he had a stress fracture in his fibula. In 2021, at age 17, he had a bone contusion in his right shoulder, and then he had a lower back issue in 2022 as well. And so I just think with the Spurs, it's undeniable that this guy, at least in my opinion, is the best defensive player I've ever seen. Offensively, we know what he is already as a shooter, as a driver, as an attacker, as a finisher at the rim, as a passer, as a connector. We know what he is, and we know what he could become in the years to come for San Antonio. But like, he's already a player ready to win. And we saw this team go 3-0 against the Thunder with these guards surviving defensively and thriving offensively with Dylan Harper, De'Aaron Fox, and of course, Stephon Castle coming off as rookie of the year. It just feels like a team that's ready to win, but they're missing a bit here. And so I have some targets for San Antonio to go after here, four of them: Michael Porter Jr., Trey Murphy, Herb Jones, Lauri Markkanen. I think these four all make sense for San Antonio, probably in that order. I think MPJ makes the most sense considering his shooting prowess, his ability to move within the flow as we saw him do for years with Jokic. We're seeing him do a little bit more on the ball this year with Brooklyn. I just think he'd be literally the perfect fit, an upgrade over Harrison Barnes. Trey Murphy can say a lot of the similar things for him. Granted, he's not quite the shooter that MPJ is. He's a slightly better defender. Herb Jones, all-world defender. Markkanen, the salary is a bit rich for me. I think he'd be fourth on my list for San Antonio. But any of these guys, they add an elite shooter with Murphy, MPJ, or Markkanen, or really good versatile defense like Murphy, Herb Jones do. And I just think these guys are worthy of being targeted for San Antonio this year, in part because you got to take advantage of what Victor Wembanyama is today. You hope he's in the prime of his career when he's 26 or 27 years old and he's super healthy and all of this stuff feels like a distant memory. But as it always is in NBA history with seven-footers, it's scary. It's scary. Like, these guys get hurt. They get hurt a lot, and Victor has throughout his basketball life so far. And so I just think the San Antonio Spurs at some point, either before the deadline or this summer, are going to be like, we're ready to take that step. And we'll see what ends up happening when they do it. But I'd be surprised if it's not probably the off season. That's what I would likely predict for them, more so than this month or in early February. Number six, the Nets become the hottest team on the trade market. MPJ, Nick Claxton, even a guy like Sharp, De'Ron Sharp coming off their bench. I just think the Nets have a lot of guys that teams are targeting and could make significant offers for. Claxton and MPJ specifically, those two guys could fit on a wide number of teams. And so I'd expect them to be one of the hottest names in the trade market so far. Next up, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander sets the all-time isolation scoring efficiency record. SGA, so far this year, scoring 1.36 points per isolation. That shatters the current number one mark Damian Lillard set in 2023 with 1.23 points per isolation. SGA, obviously, everybody knows how magnificent he is as a scorer, but 1.36 points per iso. Currently number one all time, ahead of guys like himself, 1.21 2 years ago, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, these guys who have set these elite numbers in recent years. SGA, I think he's going to hold on to that number one spot and break it. And we'll be right back after this break. Next up, Jason Tatum. I'm predicting Tatum returns in March. It just feels like with Boston this year, as good as they are, top four seed currently in the East, this team is good enough to warrant Tatum coming back, and all the signs point to it. Recently, he went through a workout at Butler. Brad Stevens was there. Every workout video we've seen from Tatum so far, he looks fluid. They haven't ruled it out. They have not ruled out Tatum yet. He hasn't ruled himself out. The Celtics still list him on the injury report every single day. I've said it on the pod before. I think there will be a day that instead of it saying Jason Tatum, right Achilles repair out, it says Jason Tatum, right Achilles repair doubtful. Right, or then maybe it says questionable. And then they say he's going to come back off the bench for 12 minutes tonight. I think that's what's going to end up happening in the middle of March, probably a home game. And then the Celtics are going to have a chance to make a deep run in the playoffs. A team that doesn't have a chance to make a deep run in the playoffs. That's the Indiana Pacers. I'm predicting they do indeed finish with the worst record in the NBA, which is good for them. This is what you want. I mean, you face heartbreak in game 7 of the NBA Finals with Halliburton suffering his torn Achilles. And this year, I mean, good on them. They're doing a hell of a job tanking this year out. And you look at the lottery standing so far this year, they have the worst record in the NBA. It's 6-28. I don't expect this to change. This team is not good. I feel like Carlisle is sneakily tanking. I don't think New Orleans is going to catch them. They don't have the incentive to. The Kings and Wizards and some of these other teams at the bottom, they don't seem to be trying to outright tank in the way that the Pacers are. So I think the Pacers are going to end up with the number one odds, which would mean, at worst, you end up with the 5th pick. So congrats to the Pacers if that indeed does hold true. Next up, the Pelicans. They're not good this year, of course. They have the second worst record, and they don't even have their own pick. I'm predicting Zion Williamson pops up on the rumor mill. I think that's going to happen this month. I'm not reporting it here. I have not heard anything about Zion Williamson being traded personally with any of my sources, but I think we're going to hear about it because Zion looks like Zion. He's closed the year really strong in 2025, 32 points against the Knicks, 31 points against the Bulls. He's rumbling towards the basket. He looks explosive. He looks like Zion for now. For now. We all know that might not last too long. But I think the Pelicans and other teams might see some appeal in finding a deal. Will a deal happen? Maybe nothing meets the threshold that would be necessary for the Pelicans to pull the trigger on a deal. But I do think his name is going to pop up this month because there's going to be some team out there thinking about, why not take a swing? And then why wouldn't the Pelicans at least listen to that offer, whatever it might be? So that's what I'm thinking this year for Zion Williamson before the trade deadline in February that we'll see his name pop up. If you're enjoying this video so far, please be sure to hit the like button on YouTube. Subscribe to @YahooNBA as well. If you haven't done so, over on YouTube, our new page where my podcast, The Dunker Spot, The Big Number, all are, and we're going to have our breakdown videos and explainers as well. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, thank you as well. Please be sure to leave a 5-star review if you haven't done so already. Next up, for my 2026 NBA predictions, Reed Sheppard has a 40-point game this year. This isn't like the hottest take. 31 in the NBA is his career high. He had 49 in the G League last year. So maybe this isn't high enough, but I think it is. He hasn't cracked over 31 so far this year. 58% on floaters this year, 46% on pull-up two-pointers, 39% on pull-up threes, 42% on catch-and-shoot threes. The Rockets are scoring 1.08 points per pick-and-roll run by Reed Sheppard. That's in the 75th percentile in the league, but he only runs 13.5 per game. I'd expect that number to go up, and this dude's efficiency is elite right now. If the volume increases, the 40-point game just doesn't seem outrageous to me. It feels more like a mild prediction, honestly. Like, he's just one by the end of the season. I don't think that's crazy in the slightest, but it's nice to see Reed coming along for Houston. He's a very important player for this team. They use him in so many different actions, handoffs, two-man actions with Şengün, his pick and roll with a large number of screeners on the team as well, the floaters he can hit from mid-range, the pull-ups, the catch-and-shoot threes. Reed is just a very vital piece for this Rockets half-court offense. I'm predicting he drops a 40 bomb at some point. Number 12. Jonathan Kuminga gets traded. I mean, this feels like a layup prediction at this point. But I do have some new stuff to add here in regards to Kuminga, because during the summer, we knew the Kings, the Suns, and the Bulls as teams that were often mentioned. The Mavericks recently, they've been in the news due to the Anthony Davis stuff that's out there. But here are three other teams that I've heard linked to Jonathan Kuminga, according to my sources. The Pelicans, the Blazers, and the Wizards. Those are three teams that I've heard have some interest in Jonathan Kuminga. And you put all this together, it seems like a more robust market for the Warriors than you might expect for a guy that hasn't been great, who's really struggled in that Kerr offense. But that's just the thing. Some of these other teams are looking at the situation as, A, we're not running the Kerr offense. We're putting him into a more traditional role that fits what he desires. And B, it's no long-term risk. He's got a team option for next year. Those long negotiations for the Warriors got ugly, but it was worth it because the fact he's not signed to a 2+1, it's a 1+1. That's making more teams across the league say, why not? We'll take a shot on a former top 10 pick and see what he looks like on our team. And so Jonathan Kuminga, he's going to get traded. I mean, you don't have to have any sources to know that. But those are some teams to think about: the Pelicans, the Blazers, and the Wizards. Up next, Donovan Klingon. He's going to have a game where he hits 5 3-pointers this year. He hasn't had more than three. But I feel like with him, slight uptick in 3-point usage for Portland this year. He's 25 of 76 from three so far this year. 32.9% is not great, but my prediction is tied to the fact that you have a rebuilding Blazers team that towards the end of the year, they're going to let this guy let it fly. And if it doesn't happen the end of this season, next season, and still in the calendar year 2026, we'll see Klingon raise his usage, taking these spot-up threes at the top of the key a little bit more than he does right now at roughly 2 per game for Portland. But what a development, man. I mean, this is a rim protector, rim runner, 7-footer, taking threes at a pretty solid level in year 2 of his career. So Portland needed this development, and it's looking very encouraging for them moving forward. Up next, the Sixers. They don't fire Nick Nurse. I know Sixers fans right now, they're looking for people to blame. And I get it. Nurse hasn't been great. You know, end of game play calling, questionable rotations, weird handling of Jared McCain with his return this season. But I'm not getting much of a sense that Nurse is going to be fired. I'm not getting much of a sense that he's really on the hot seat right now. I think the Sixers team, as I talked about on the podcast last week, the biggest concerns are the biggest, most expensive contracts on the team, and that's Joel Embiid and Paul George. Embiid is on and off. Some nights he looks more like himself. Other nights he looks like he's 45 years old. Paul George is nowhere near the player the Sixers were expecting. I don't think that's Daryl Morey's fault. I don't think that's Nick Nurse's fault. I just don't think there's a clear-cut replacement for him necessarily this year or this summer either. And maybe I'll be wrong about this. Things can change quick in the coaching world, but I'm not getting the sense that Nurse is going to be fired as some Sixers fans might hope that he does. Number 15 here, the Clippers make the playoffs. The Clippers, they started the year absolutely horrifically, but right now they're only 2 games back from the play-in. 2 games back, and they're only 6 games back from the 8th seed within the play-in. And you look at some of the teams ahead of them, the Mavericks, the Grizzlies, the Blazers, the Jazz especially, some of these teams don't have the greatest incentive to make the playoffs. You can make the argument for Memphis to want to drop out. Maybe they trade Ja Morant. Maybe they want to get a lottery pick. Utah doesn't want to make the play-in. Portland, it's probably better for them to miss the playoffs. Dallas, you know, we'll see what path they end up going, but the Clippers have all the incentive in the world to try to get into the playoffs as an old team. And I think they can catch the Warriors. They're six games back. If the Warriors don't make a big move for a star, I mean, this team is a 500 basketball team right now. There's a lot of time left for the Clippers to catch them. And with the fascinating thing with the Clippers is the fact that Zubats goes out, it feels like things are about to get worse for them. Brook Lopez moves into the starting lineup, and suddenly everything looks better. For the offense, it's flowing, more space for Kawhi Leonard and James Harden to operate. Brook Lopez himself is playing better defensively. I ripped him to shreds in the middle of December as looking like a guy who was done. But he looks back. The team looks better right now, and he's playing so well that I can't help but wonder if the Clippers might dangle Zubats as a trade piece and use Zubats as a guy that they go out and get more pieces to bolster the rotation. And so that's been a thought on my mind recently with this Brook Lopez resurgence. It's changed everything. I mean, it's not just Kawhi being a superstar. It's not just James Harden still being at an all-star level. Brook Lopez has been awesome in the past couple of weeks for the Clippers after a really bad start. Next prediction. The Heat become a top destination for a star once again. The Heat are only 18-15. They have the number 13 offensive rating, the number 4 defensive rating. You look at this roster, it feels like they just need a star. They just need a star. They have everything else. They have front court versatility with Khalil Ware and Bam Adebayo. Bam, who has been awesome, again, defensively, belongs in the first team all defense, even the DPOY conversation as well. They offensively, Hakez, after a sophomore slump, has taken a big leap this year. This team's just missing a star. But so how do the Heat get that star without sacrificing what makes them appealing today? That's going to be the big question with the Miami Heat. But undeniably, this team has far exceeded my expectations. I didn't think they'd be good this year. They have been quite good. And it feels like this is a team ripe for a star player to look at and say, hey, I can be the final piece of the puzzle there. Number 17 for my 2026 NBA predictions, Tijan Salon has a 30-point game for the Charlotte Hornets. Salon, wow, what a year for him in year two, shooting 46% from three, up from 28% as a rookie. Shot looks smoother. He's just shooting it quicker. He's shooting it from deeper as well. He's using that three-pointer to attack closeouts. And that's what's been really encouraging with him is some of the little bit of off the dribble stuff he's doing within the flow of the offense, because the shot is opening up driving opportunities for him to use his athleticism at the rim. He had a 21-point game in December against the Raptors, and I'm thinking we're going to see him crack 30. That's what's going to happen. Salon will crack 30 at some point this year. Con Knipple, he's the rookie of the year, possibly him or Cooper Flagg. But don't overlook Tijan Salon as one of the most encouraging young players for the Charlotte Hornets. Number 18, the Wizards end up drafting in the top three. Obviously, lottery night, who knows what can happen. I just have a feeling in my gut that this is going to be a good year for the Washington Wizards. Keyshawn George making great progress as a two-way player for Washington. Trey Johnson, 40% from three on the year, hitting 5 three-pointers per game. Alex Sarr, man. I mentioned the stat earlier with Cooper Flagg ranking third in isolation defense. Alex Sarr, right ahead of him so far this year. The Wizards stink on defense. It's not Sarr's fault. He's switchable. He's a solid rim protector. He just needs the pieces around him. It feels like the Wizards have a lot of the foundation. They just need their star. And this is the year I hope they end up in the top three and get either Darren Peterson or A.J. DiBanza or Cam Boozer. Literally any of those guys would fit great next to Sarr and Johnson and George and all these young guys, Bob Carrington, that the Wizards have. They're losing, but it feels like a team that's making great progress. And occasionally they win, like they did against the Bucks on Wednesday. That was a fun one. And what a terrible loss for Milwaukee, by the way. We'll be right back. Pop quiz time. Pop quiz before we get to our next prediction here. There are 8 players averaging over 24 points per game with 60% true shooting and over 6 assists per game. Some of the names are obvious. Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, SGA, James Harden, and then you have Austin Reeves and Denny Avdija, and then Jamal Murray. That's 7. Jokic, Doncic, SGA, Harden, Reeves, Avdija, Murray. Who is the 8th player? I'll give you a second. I'll say he's a guard. He's in the Western Conference. He's in his 3rd season. Keyonte George, which leads me to my next prediction here. Keyonte George enters the All-Star conversation next year. Not this year, next year. It's too early right now. Jazz aren't good enough. But next year, because the rate of improvement that this guy is experiencing has been remarkable. His ability as a scorer to get buckets at all 3 levels of the game with tough floaters in the paint, getting to the basket, scoring with either his offhand or his strong hand, the 3-pointers off the dribble, the pull-ups, finishing through contact. He's doing literally everything for the Jazz. Literally everything offensively. This is a complete scorer, and he's one of the reasons why the Jazz aren't at the bottom of the standings. He's one of the reasons why they look too good to tank. It's all Keyonte George's fault. So I just think this guy's on a clear-cut all-star trajectory. It wouldn't shock me if next year he's a 28-point-per-game guy with a little bit more assists, 8 assists, you know, 4 or 5 boards per game. Look, Denny Avdija is probably going to win Most Improved Player this year. A lot of people think it should be Jalen Johnson, and understandably so. That guy's having an awesome offensive year for the Atlanta Hawks, but he's been way worse defensively than he's been in the past. And so I'd put Keyonte George a tick ahead of Jalen Johnson in my Most Improved vote as of today on January 1st. And I think next year, you know, come December, he's going to be a guy, you know, people are talking about as an all-star. Next up, number 20. Who's going to trade for Ja Morant? I'm predicting it's going to be the Minnesota Timberwolves. There's been a lot of smoke around Ja and his future. There's no clear indication that he's even available, that the Grizzlies would want to trade him. But do you look at the Memphis Grizzlies and their position right now? There's a real chance by early February, this is a team that has incentive to want to be in the lottery, and that Ja has more really good games, more 40-point games that raise his value and make him appealing to other teams as a potential final piece to the puzzle. And the Minnesota Timberwolves, Sam Amick, among others, have reported multiple times that the Wolves are a team monitoring the Ja Morant situation. And so let's look at a fake trade here involving Minnesota and Memphis that would get Minnesota to acquire Ja Morant. And I have them also getting Jock Landale and John Conchar in the deal, in part because those guys can help. Landale's a great backup center. Conchar is a solid rotation guy. And Memphis would get Naz Reid, Yoan Berenjay, Dante DiVincenzo, and Mike Conley, their old friend, plus a future first-round pick swap. Memphis fans probably think this isn't enough. They'd probably want an additional first-round swap from Minnesota in this. I believe it's a 2028 they have available, but something along these lines I think makes sense for both sides. Naz Reid, Yoan Berenjay, those guys could really fit well next to Jaren Jackson Jr. on a tanking team. And I think Mike Conley could help ease the pain for Grizzlies fans for losing Ja Morant, bring back Conley for his farewell tour. It'd be kind of a beautiful thing. Maybe this isn't enough. It depends on how you feel about Yoan Berenjay. I just think he's such an elite athlete. Wolves fans know this. Like, maybe he should play more. And for Minnesota, if it's not Ja, maybe it's Colin Sexton. I just think this team is going to trade for a guard. They need an upgrade in the backcourt next to Anthony Edwards. And I think it's going to be Ja. It feels like a Tim Conley move, a big swing. And then you look at their potential depth chart. If they were to make a move like this to go get a Ja Morant, this team would look pretty good, man. They look pretty deep. Ja and Ant in the backcourt together. McDaniels, Randall, Gobert, the front court stays the same. But then the depth, if you trade DiVincenzo It forces Chris Finch to play Terrence Shannon more often. Jalen Clark gets more minutes as well. Jock Landale is a three-point shooting big, a hustle guy. To me, he's an upgrade in terms of what they're missing. Like, Naz Reid in a vacuum is a better player than Jock Landale, but he provides some of the stuff that the front court is missing behind Gobert. And so that's where I look at the situation and say, this is an overall roster upgrade for Minnesota, even aside from the fact you raise your ceiling with Ja Morant, because you're forcing Finch to play Shannon. You're getting a better fit in the front court. And this team just feels like they can play with one big, a bunch of wings. They can play with two bigs. They can play with just Ant out there. They can stagger Ant and Ja. They can play them both together. This seems like a team to me that would be ready to take that leap in the Western Conference. And for Memphis, I know Grizzlies fans probably hate me right now, so I'll say something to make you happier. My next prediction, Cedric Coward makes first team all rookie. I know that doesn't help probably, but Cedric Coward, dude's awesome. I mean, I interviewed him last year and he impressed me so much. Best interview I've done with a prospect, and he's come through this year. Grizzlies fans are seeing why with his ability to pull up from mid-range, the spot up three-pointers, the rebounding. I mean, the dude does literally everything out there. He's third in the NBA among players 6'6" or under in rebounds per game. Josh Hart, number one with 8 per game. Westbrook, number two at 6.7 per game. And then Cedric Howard ripping down 6.5 rebounds per game. I mean, the amount of second chance points this guy gets with his hustle and the nose for the ball he has, to me, I think it kind of symbolizes his game as a whole. He's just a guy who does a little bit of everything. Even if he's not scoring, he impacts the game in a positive manner with his cuts, with his rebounds, with his defense, with his connective passing. If this guy isn't a first team all rookie, the voters are making a mistake. They are. And I think, you know, Cooper Flagg or Con Knipple are going to win Rookie of the Year in all likelihood. But that third spot very well might belong to Cedric Coward. And what a steal he looks like he is for the Memphis Grizzlies. And their very bright future they have with Zach Edey and him and others on that team. Speaking about sort of bright futures, the Sacramento Kings, they get a steal. And Maxime right now, the steal of the second round. I'm predicting that he makes an all-rookie team. Right now, in December, 15.5 points per game, 9.3 boards, 1.4 assists, not even shooting a lot of threes right now for the Kings. 41.7% from three on one per game in December. He took 5.5 per game at Stanford. That was one of the reasons why I loved him as a prospect, because he's a 7-footer who can attack off the dribble and hit threes and offer size at the rim. He's not even shooting so far for the Kings, but he can, he should, and I think at some point he will shoot more at a higher volume, and that could really open the floor for him when it comes to using what he can do off the dribble and from the post, backing down guys as well, if he also has the threat to either shoot from three or face up from mid-range. I love this kid. I love the youth on the Kings. I think this team has a weird, odd, stupid roster with some of the veterans they have together, but I love the kids they have. Nick Clifford, hopefully they can get some minutes for Keon Ellis. Obviously Murray good as well, but I mean, Maxime right now looking like the steal of the second round. Number 23, the Bulls. They stay stuck in the middle once again. They're 16-17 in the play-in for the fourth year in a row. I mean, they have a little bit of a residency in the Eastern Conference play-in here. And what a bummer, dude, because this roster is pretty fun. Like, they have a lot of good young players, but they need a star. AJ DiBonza, Darren Peters, and Cam Boozer, these are guys that could possibly be the future faces of your franchise. And I'm thinking about it for the Bulls. I do not expect them to do this, but I would love to see them trade Vooch. If you trade Vooch, it'd be a stealth tank move, because Vooch has over 800 minutes, almost 1,000 minutes already so far this year. If you trade him and you remove those minutes, it forces Jalen Smith, who's been good, but into an outsized role. Like, he's not a real center. And then if you are without Vooch, that means, you know, Ulbrich is playing rookie minutes. Those probably aren't going to go too well. where Zach Collins is being forced to play minutes. Zach Collins, who the Spurs once played heavily next to Victor Wembanyama and behind Victor Wembanyama because they wanted to tank. They used him to stealth tank. Trade Vooch, and your team is suddenly going to regress. So I think for the Bulls, I hope they do that. I don't think they will. I think they're going to stay stuck in the middle, as they always seem to do, unfortunately. Next up, the Raptors. My prediction is Scottie Barnes gets named to an all-defensive team. This dude, he's awesome. He's so good, man. 114 deflections so far this year, 7th in the NBA, 5th in the NBA in blocks, 12th in the NBA in steals. He's the only player with more than 40 steals and 40 blocks, the only player with a combined 100 steals and blocks this year. I mean, what is there to say? I mean, this dude is so versatile on the ball. He's strong. He's long-armed. He's got a big frame. He can handle bigger players on the post, but he's quick and he's switchable. He can go against smaller guys as well. Scottie Barnes is the number one reason why the Raptors have a top five defense this year. The number one reason why. And I think this guy deserves to be rewarded, at least so far. We'll see how the year finishes with a spot on an all-defensive team. Up next, the Pistons. I predict they trade Tobias Harris for an upgrade. And I hope this happens. Maybe this is just wishful thinking on my part, but whether it's Michael Porter Jr. or Lauri Markkanen or Trey Murphy, they gotta go for an upgrade over Harris. He's solid. No disrespect to him as a player, but they can do better at that spot than Tobias Harris. They have all of their future picks available. They have some tradable pieces, a Jaden Ivey, a Ron Holland, guys that you could flip and not feel too horrible about it for an upgrade. And if it doesn't happen pre-deadline, I'd be disappointed. But, you know, Harris as a free agent, maybe you could sign and trade him during the offseason, but they got to find an upgrade. I think it should happen now. I would go for it now. The East is open. Tatum's not back yet for Boston. The Knicks aren't a clear-cut juggernaut. The Cavs are currently a 500 basketball team. You got an opportunity to go to an NBA Finals. I suggest the Pistons take it, and I think they will. A couple more trade-related predictions for you here. Number 26, I think the Suns are going to get active. You know, this is a team that, you know, they've been fun. They've been competitive. I think they make some moves around the edges. They get something cooking here, and so how do you add to that when you have a lack of assets? Trade some guys that aren't playing. Nick Richards, he's DNP CD basically every night right now. He's disappeared. Can you flip his $5 million expiring salary into something that offers you some upside? I think those are the types of moves the Suns will look for ahead of the deadline. And then, of course, this offseason as well. The Magic, I think they target more shooting. That's my prediction for them. They have some tradable pieces. Jonathan Isaac, $15 million contract. Tyus Jones, $7 million. Jet Howard, $5.5 million. Jace Richardson, rookie, $3 million. These are tradable pieces for the Magic, and they need more shooting. They're 25th in the NBA in three-point attempts, 28th in the NBA in three-point percentage. Clearly, the Desmond Bain addition was not enough for this roster offensively. They need more, so go out and get it. You got some pieces. I think they will. I think they should. We'll see if it happens before the February deadline, though. Number 28, I predict the Cleveland Cavaliers trade one of their core four. There's no reason to believe this is going to happen, to be clear. No sourced information here. But I look at the Cavs. They're a second apron team, and there's not a lot of paths to get better. So why not flip one of these ill-fitting star players you have? Right? I just think it makes sense. Whether it's Allen or Garland, or even the Evan Mobley route, he probably can get you the most back. But I think with Garland or Allen, you package them with you have pick swaps and 30 or 32. You have your first and 31. This summer, your 2033 first would become available. So in theory, this offseason, they'll have two firsts and two swaps. They can end up moving. Suddenly, you'd have a lot more flexibility with these other guys on your roster. And so with Cleveland, I wouldn't anticipate that happening ahead of the deadline. But this summer, I don't think this team is going to win the finals. I don't think they're going to make the finals. that would potentially force the front office to have to make a big, big move. And thinking along those same lines for my next prediction, number 29, the Knicks don't make the NBA Finals. That's my thought after watching them blow a lead to the San Antonio Spurs without Victor Wembanyama on New Year's Eve, Wednesday night. And then my last prediction here, the Knicks don't make the finals, but Giannis gets traded to New York this summer. So that's my 30th and final prediction here, tying these two together, because I watched these games back to back. Knicks blow a lead against the Wemby-less Spurs in the fourth quarter when he went out. And then I watched the Bucks lose to the freaking Wizards again. Again. I mean, God. It's horrible. And Doc Rivers after the game acted like it wasn't a big deal. I mean, this team has 8 wins and 2 of them are against you guys. It's just despicable. Look, I think today the Knicks are the East favorites, but the Pistons are one trade away from being the favorites over them. The Celtics are a Tatum return away from being the favorites over everybody else in the East. And that could lead us to a summer in which the Knicks are like, well, what do we do to make this leap? I think this is a team that very well could make a move, a big move for Giannis this offseason. But before then, I think we're going to see the Bucks fire Doc Rivers, and they're probably going to make at least one more move to try to bolster the team around Giannis this year, especially after losing to the Wizards on New Year's Eve. And that's unless Giannis asks out ahead of the deadline, in which case anything's possible. But in that case, I wouldn't think it would be the Knicks. I don't think the Knicks would want to make a move that big mid-season when the team is already as good as it is. And there's no guarantee that the Brunson-Giannis fit would be perfect. Everybody thought Damian Lillard and Giannis was going to be this awesome fit. It wasn't an awesome fit. And so I think the Knicks wouldn't do it mid-season, which would mean the Spurs or the Rockets, maybe they decide to take a swing. The Warriors, they could get really creative with Butler and with Kuminga. The Lakers, with Austin Reeves and a bunch else. The Heat, the Hawks, you never know with Atlanta. They seem like a team willing to take some big swings right now. We'll see with Giannis Antetokounmpo, but I think the Bucks keep him through the deadline. I think the Knicks don't make the NBA Finals, because either the Pistons make a big trade to become the favorites, or because the Celtics get Tatum back and make other additions too. And then that leads to the summer, with Giannis still being in Milwaukee and with the Knicks being in a position to feel like they got to shake things up. So those are my 30 predictions for the 2026 NBA calendar year. This is fun. I'd be curious to know what your predictions are. Please leave a comment on YouTube or on Spotify, wherever you're listening. Hit me up on social media as well if you'd like to with your predictions for the 2026 NBA year. Tell me where you disagree, where you think I might be crazy, where I'm spot on as well. That would be much appreciated. Thank you, everybody, for real, for listening to my podcast. 2025 was a lot of fun. Had a lot of great interviews, a lot of great guests, and we have many more coming in 2026. Thank you to Emmy Franks and the whole staff for producing my show. Thank you to Father John Misty for the music. Thanks to you, as always, for giving us a listen. I hope you have a very, very happy 2026. Happy New Year, everybody. Thank you.